This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, where we talk about the biggest stories from across Texas. Hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons, Managing Editor here at Texas Scorecard. We're going to talk about a few of the big stories from this week. Later on, we're going to have Robert Montoya, our investigative journalist, talking about some new developments on Operation Lone Star down on Texas's southern border. But first, we've got Michael Quinn Sullivan, our publisher here to talk about kind of a grab bag of news items that were up at Texas
Scorecard. Why do you get to move your hands? I was told not to move my hands. So
you know, I've got free. You can move your hands all you
can
want.
Can I? Yeah,
I think so.
Your studio people said I couldn't move my hands.
Yeah, Luke said it was all good if we're on the wide shot now. So
oh, is it okay?
There we go.
Okay.
Yeah. Break Great. The fourth wall a little bit there. But, you know, coming up here in a few days, right, I think it's at the forefront of a lot of people's minds is these elections, right? The Republican primary elections are March 1st. That's Tuesday. These are the final days where campaigns are making their final appeals to voters after what was kind of an abridged early voting period, too.
Yeah, so, you know, currently we have lower turnout than expected, of course, at, you know, maybe Tuesday. You know, lots of people go flood the polling places. But right now, it's looking like this is a lower than expected turnout. Certainly going to have folks say, oh, my gosh, it's, you know, lower because, you know, we had a day where polls in some parts of the state, you saw either polls close early or maybe shut down for a few hours, that kind of thing, because of icy weather. But look, it's early voting. You've got 2 weeks.
Yeah.
If your schedule is so tight, you could only have that ice day to go vote. Maybe you need to lighten up your schedule a little bit, particularly because it's 7 to 7 this coming Tuesday, open for hours upon hours throughout the 2 week early voting period. You know, campaigns will always find excuses, but the fact is, you know, they've got these last essentially 3 days. To make a case to folks, take the people who didn't turn out because of the ice, make the case of why it's important to turn out.
Mm-hmm. And I think you look at those big races at the top. Obviously, we focused a lot on the governor's race. We've got all that coverage at decisiontexas.com or at texasscorecard.com. You can go click on Decision Texas, see all the stories we have about that. But, you know, we've talked a lot about that, but there's actually some other races and potentially one that could go to a runoff. All eyes right now are on, I think, the attorney general's race as well as potentially going to a runoff there.
Yeah, so you've got the attorney general's race where you've got the incumbent Ken Paxton being challenged by three folks who all will have access to money. They've got names, either money or name ID or both. And Ken Paxton, all three of them are kind of doing their job as challengers and all beating up on Ken Paxton. So it is very possible you end up with a runoff there Ken Paxton. You can expect Ken Paxton is in first place going into into a runoff if there's going to be one. But you know, for an incumbent who goes into a runoff, it is never a happy place because kind of definitionally more than 50% of the voters have already decided I'm going with someone else.
Right.
I'm trading out. And so now it becomes very easy if you're a George P. Bush voter or you're a Louis Gohmert voter or an Eva Guzman voter, it's pretty easy to be convinced to go with one of those others against Ken Paxton when you make that move. So, you know, Ken Paxton spending the next 3 days doing everything he possibly can to avoid the runoff. And that'd be the same with about the governor, probably not in as much trouble, or go down the race to state rep, county commissioner, whoever else on the ballot. When there are multiple candidates in a race, you're an incumbent, you really want to do everything you can in these last 3 days to avoid that runoff.
Mm-hmm. Another race that doesn't get talked about so much, but is shaped up pretty interestingly, has been for the Criminal Court of Appeals. Now, this is a statewide court. People do get to vote on these. They're on the primary ballot. You've got 3 of the 9 judges up for re-election this year, but only one actually has a primary opponent, and that's Judge Scott Walker, who's being challenged by Judge Clint Morgan. Now, I think a lot of people would just not even really know what the Criminal Court of Appeals does. I think it doesn't get the spotlight that often, except for the fact that it really blew up in the news a couple months ago when they had a decision that essentially stripped the ability for the Attorney General to enforce election fraud, to prosecute election fraud. And this actually goes to the heart of a lot of the things that the legislature has passed, a lot of the laws that the legislature had tasked the Attorney General with going with. And so now, all of a sudden, you've got this race that otherwise wouldn't get too much attention. Now you've actually got an interesting narrative there.
Yeah, well, and look, let's go back 6 years when Scott Walker was first elected. You know, kind of, let's all put our minds back, you know, 6 years ago. And this kind of is telling about the way most folks approach the Court of Criminal Appeals. It's the Supreme Court for criminal matters in Texas. Mm-hmm. The Texas Supreme Court only handles civil matters. And so you've got the Court of Criminal Appeals 6 years ago. You have this, a run. You have a race. It was a contested race for an open seat. And at that same time, you had Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker in the news. He was the golden boy fighting the liberals, all those things. And so you had this fellow running who I cannot recall his full name, but he started campaigning as Scott Walker because that is, it's like his middle name or something. And voters went, oh, okay, I'll pick that one. A big drop off in terms of participation. And people picked him in large part because he had the same name as somebody they've heard on the news. And that's where, you know, these judicial races get so difficult to forecast, is that, you know, sometimes voters skip the race, sometimes they vote maybe based on name ID, and that's how Scott Walker got in. He sided with the majority in this most in this decision that you mentioned, stripping the AG of prosecutorial power over election fraud cases, and so now you've got this race that probably most of us would have ignored, sadly, and yet, you know, it's now kind of risen to the forefront because of the issues involved there. Clint Morgan has been out, you know, working the state hard, particularly around the issue. It should also be noted, you know, something that, you know, where I think there do need to be some grown-up adult questions put to the operations of the court, maybe the way we, you know, operate things with our courts, is this decision very notably came out after the filing period. And so you had eight judges, you know, all three of them who were on the ballot, all three of them went with the majority, all three of them wanted to strip the Attorney General. So that way, effectively, by pushing that decision after the filing deadline, they kind of denied Texans the ability to review their work. And, you know, this is they knew this was going to be a big case. They knew this was going to be a lightning rod case, given election integrity and everything else. And the judges decided, we'll release our opinion after the filing deadline. We need to ask ourselves, if we're going to have an elected judiciary in Texas, which we should keep, we maybe need to get these folks to recognize that they aren't black-robed demigods, that they actually work for the citizens and are answerable to us by the decisions they make.
Yeah, and keeping on that theme, I guess, now of talking about the Attorney General and some of those actions that come out of that office right now, you did have earlier this week the Attorney General, Ken Paxton, finally, after a months and months, actually, released an opinion, a non-binding opinion, saying that he believed that gender modification procedures, but also the counseling, the medications, things like that, are child abuse. Governor Greg Abbott then took that letter and used it. It sent it to essentially the Department of Family Protective Services, saying, okay, this is your directive, go after that. The problem is that just days later, you've got district attorneys in the biggest counties in the state now, you know, Travis, Dallas, et cetera, saying, we're not going to do that. And it just underscores, I think, two things. One, this is an interesting thing for the governor to be saying right now, a few days before a primary election, where he's being hit on this issue. But two, why wasn't this passed during the regular session where there would be an actual law?
Yeah, so, you know, that's where all of us need to, you know, need to kind of recognize that the only thing that matters is the results of a legislative session. That's all that really matters. Attorney General Paxton, his office could have released this opinion months ago. He sat with you, for the conversation series you did, in which he said essentially what's embodied in that opinion. So they could have put it out then. That, you know, he could have done his opinion, but again, like you said, Attorney General opinions are just that. They are the opinions of the Attorney General. They're not the law of the state of Texas. And so I think that when you've got the Attorney General Issuing an opinion right now, it does kind of raise some kind of icky questions about is this serious or is this campaigning? I think Ken Paxton is serious on the issue, and they'll all plead their procedures and all those sorts of things. Meanwhile, you've got Greg Abbott, who has purposefully and studiously ignored the issue for the last 4 years. Now that he's being hit on it, suddenly he takes this opinion and sends a letter, essentially, to a state agency. Oh, you guys need to investigate these things, to which the people who actually prosecute the cases say, hey, there's no law. And, I understand, you understand, everyone watching understands what the, that those Democrats don't ever want to prosecute these cases. But yet, Governor Abbott and the Republican legislature have made it so that these Democrat prosecutors can say with a straight face, there's no law. There's nothing I can prosecute. There's no law. And so when your state rep, when your governor, when your state senator says, oh, well, there's this non-binding legal opinion, the correct response is, no, you need to step up and do your work.
Well, excellent. We'll be following that. We'll see how that plays, right, on that election on Tuesday night. That's March 1st. We're going to be kind of discussing some of the early voting highlights Tuesday night, but I want to encourage everybody on Wednesday morning at 9:30 a.m. We're going to be right here in the studio discussing some of what we learn out of those elections, the election results, and what it means for Texans, and we look forward to that. So thank you for joining, Michael.
Thanks, Brandon.
Well, more evidence has come out claiming that Operation Lone Star, Texas's effort on the southern border, is little more than political theater. Robert Montoya, our investigative reporter, has a new piece on that. As you continue to look at this, he joins us right now. Robert, we've talked about, when you've been on here before, we've talked about the military aspect of this, that
Correct.
A lot of what the National Guard is down there doing has not really been effective. But lately, you've got pieces up at TexasScorecard.com talking about a completely different aspect, which is the judicial side of things.
Correct. Most of the criticism of Operation Lone Star up to this point, it's been called poorly planned political theater, is about the military aspect. But we've been investigating the judicial aspect. And what we found is appears to support the claim that OLS is poorly planned. We've uncovered secret judicial proceedings, possible violations of state law, and also an overwhelmed judicial system.
So break that down for people. When somebody's arrested in Operation Lone Star, right, for illegally crossing, what happens?
So the crime they're arrested for is criminal trespass.
Okay.
And at most, you pay like a $4,000 fine or you're in jail for a year if you're found guilty, one or both. What we uncovered is that in late November, early December of last year, an appointee of Governor Abbott to a state board, Judge Vivian Torres, she signed bonds for illegal immigrants who were arrested over email instead of in open court where citizens could witness. That triggered a very strong response from local officials.
Now, are they allowed to even do that over email?
That's the real question. In the lawsuit filed by Kinney County Attorney Brent Smith, where these illegal immigrants were arrested, he alleged that because he and local public servants were out of pocket at that time, either because they were sick or they were at a conference, because it was done over email, he believes that Judge Torres engaged in ex parte communications.
Well, there's that, and that's not even the only aspect of this that you've reported on that could potentially be breaking state law. I mean, you've reported on some other factors, too.
Correct. Again, it's important to remember that Governor Abbott made the mission of OLS not to stop illegal border crossings, but to apprehend lawbreakers at the border. That put in play important parts of state law, one of which is, in state law, when you're arrested, depending on what you're arrested for, you can only be held in jail for so long without a hearing. For criminal trespass under OLS, the most is 30 days. We have email communications of defense attorneys saying that their clients have been in jail some 60, 90, or some over 100 days with no hearing.
Is that just, are the courts overwhelmed? What's leading to that?
Well, one of the things that was discussed in three meetings last year of the Texas Indigent Defense Commission, these meetings were in July, August, and October, months after Abbott started Operation Lone Star, they were discussing how the court system was overwhelmed with all of these cases and how even Kinney County Attorney Brent Smith was overwhelmed trying to prosecute them in his area and that there was a desperate need for defense attorneys for all these illegals who'd been arrested.
And these, right now at this point, right, because of these long delays, they're essentially being released on bond, no?
So in the situation that we uncover in late November, early December, there was signing of bonds mm-hmm. over email. And the concern of the judge was that, you know, they'd been in jail for so long. But again, the question was, can that be done in a secret judicial proceeding instead of in open courts? Mm-hmm. And County Attorney Brent Smith believes, no, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm. I think the quote that really summed it up that you have in your article up at TexasScorecard.com right now, that I really encourage folks to read. It's a long read, but it's definitely, definitely in depth and worth it. Was Judge Richard Evans back then saying, this is going to be a train wreck, I think, to say the least. And it looks like that's kind of been realized.
Yes, that's exactly what seems to be happening right now.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us, Robert.
Thank you, Brandon.
Well, thank you again to everybody for tuning in. I want to remind you that with Election Day on Tuesday night, we're going to be coming to you live after the polls close to talk a little bit about it. But I really want to encourage everybody to join us on Wednesday morning at 9:30 a.m. Me and Michael are going to go through the results and what it means for Texans. A couple of quick housekeeping things. If you're interested in joining the team here at Texas Scorecard, we've got some openings. You can go to texasscorecard.com/opportunities to learn more about some of the positions that are open. And if you're somebody between the ages of 18 to 25 that's interested in spending some time with us here, writing, research, etc., go to texasscorecard.com/fellowship. We've got applications open for the summer of 2022, fall of 2022, and then now, of course, the spring of 2023, if you're a planner. Again, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline. You can watch the premiere of The Headline on our website at 5:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. If you like today's production, please consider subscribing and leaving a review on whatever podcasting platform you listen on.